5
4
3 2
1
Welcome to Tech Talk, your feast of technology news that's all wrapped up like a big Christmas parcel yet to arrive. But it will arrive over the next 57 minutes. Oh, how wonderful. Stephen Scott's here with you again. Hello. And Sean Preece is back with us. Hi, Sean.
Hello, Stephen. Fantastic. Nice start.
I don't know where this rubbish comes from. I really don't. Tim Schwartz, host of the Life After Blindness podcast. Hello, Tim.
Hello, Stephen. Hi, Sean. How you guys doing?
Hey, you sound tired. It must be early in America.
It is definitely early. This is my morning voice, but I am here and ready to go.
Well, we're looking forward to it. Lots to get through over the course of the next hour. We are going to be talking about the latest news. Looking forward to that, actually. Loads of tech news that we haven't really had a chance to get into. Well, for no reason other than we just haven't. So we're going to get into the tech news this hour. Lots to talk about there. Also coming up this hour, more Potter's Picks. She's in the kitchen this week, guys.
I'm saying nothing about stereotypes. That's fine.
I'm not saying anything either. What I will say, though, is that I'm looking forward to hearing her items because, you know, I quite like this. I mean, I loved last week's. I loved hearing about this egg boiler, which I have an egg boiler. But this one did something else. What was it? Poached. That was it. Poached eggs. Yeah. I must admit, I'm a bit of a simplistic guy. I just go with whatever the egg boiler delivers. So, you know, if it throws up a boiled egg, then I'll eat the boiled egg. I will remove the shell first, obviously.
No, you're not an animal.
No,
of course.
Exactly, no. Not completely weird. But yeah, so there's that. And also, Julie Roddaway returns this week. She is back to tell us all about a new battery pack that she's managed to get for her smartphone, which sounds quite interesting. I mean, you know, we hear a lot about these different battery chargers. I mean, Sean, you're a bit of an obsessive, frankly, when it comes to these.
Of course I am. You can't do without a battery pack on you somewhere. Everything needs topping up. Everything is running out of battery. It's a constant stress. So, yeah, battery charger is definitely an essential. And if you can get an accessible one, even better.
And that's what Julie's done, so we're looking forward to hearing more about that. And Tim, you're just going to wake up over the next hour, aren't you?
I'm going to do my best to wake up and contribute as much as I can, absolutely.
Oh, and by the way, I should mention, I've got my second week of Android to tell you about.
The pressure is building, we can't wait.
I'm tense.
So yeah, that's all to come, but let's get to the news first of all, and Tim's going to kick things off with a bit of an announcement. It sounds very grand, doesn't it? But you're going to talk a little bit, sorry to put you on the spot here, Tim, but you're going to kick things off with a bit of a chat around Microsoft and their accessibility update.
Yes, Stephen, thanks for that. So yes, Microsoft has recently released their fall creators update, and they are saying that they have added many different accessibility updates to it. They've added support with Braille and Narrator to make that a lot better and working better together. They've added better support for Zoom and Narrator to work together. One of the notable things I read about doesn't do anything for me, but might help you guys, where you can actually use the magnifier to zoom in on particular text, and then even if you're still unable to read that particular text or having difficulty with it, it will work with the narrator in order to read that text. So as soon as you zoom in on it or zoom in on a particular part of a page, then you can use this keyboard shortcut to make narrator read that part of the page. So they're really trying to integrate things a lot better with the magnifier and narrator and the Braille support, and really trying to just put together an altogether better package for accessibility.
It is called the fall update, but over here in the UK, we'd call it the autumn update. So it makes more sense then, because I had no idea. What do they mean? The fall, as in F-U-L-L? I was confused, but...
Not the first time, is it, Sean?
No, exactly. It's my default state, to be honest, so I'm quite happy there. But yeah, so this is the next major update after, you know, obviously you had the anniversary edition, creators edition, and this is the next update. The thing I am slightly confused about is the magnifier narrator more integrated. Can I even say that word? Let me try that again.
No, you can't.
More combined together.
That's it. So,
because I use magnification, and I mean, I've got it set up so it just follows the focus anyway. So, I mean, I haven't noticed an issue from that. But I think the important thing here is the better support for Braille, and being able to control narrator using a Braille display is a big feature in this. So, yeah, I think it's definitely worth a look. We're all going to get it anyway. There is no opting out of this. So,
okay, I get the way Tim explained it, because I listened to what Tim said, Sean, is that actually it does sound quite good what they're doing with Narrator and Zoom, in the sense that I like this idea of almost it's speaking text selection. I think that's what you're getting at there, Tim.
Whoa, hang on. I did listen to Tim. Let's not start that business. I'm going to stand up for myself here. I listened, but what I'm saying is
But then you said you didn't understand, so I was just clarifying that.
Now,
okay,
boys.
Yeah, that's true. I did say that. Sorry, Tim. Carry on.
No, I think that's a good idea to sort of combine those two, because I mean, in fairness to Sean, and I won't say that very often, you know, I didn't quite understand what the difference was. I thought they worked together anyway, and I think you did as well.
Yes.
But I think they do work together, but I think what you're suggesting is that this update will actually bring them closer together in the practical sense that if there's something, like my classic is phone numbers. If I was to look at a phone number on a screen, I wouldn't necessarily be able to read it to maybe type it out or to you know, type out on a phone or whatever. So being able to sort of arrow through and listen to the phone number, that all sounds good. I guess my question is, what do we think of Narrator in 2017? Is it up there? I mean, you know, the only sort of comparable, I guess, is VoiceOver, because it's free. You know, it's built into the system. Mm-hmm. So, you know, people will hate me for saying that, I'm sure. But, you know, let's be honest about it. You know, ChromeVox is another. And I don't think ChromeVox is particularly well-established yet. My experience of it has been, if you love hearing the phrase unlabeled button a lot, then you're going to love it. And that's a problem. But if you use Narrator, you certainly do have a decent experience. Is it good enough? I mean, I know you use NVDA, Tim. Would you switch?
You know, I don't think that I would switch completely just yet. Up until recently, I had just been using JAWS in my professional life and then NVDA in my personal life, and not really using Narrator all that much. But with all this news around the creators update and us talking about Narrator more, the last couple of weeks or so, I've tried to use it. I've forced myself to use Narrator a little bit more. And compared to NVDA and especially JAWS, of course, I don't think it's quite there in comparison to those two services, but it's a heck of a lot better than it used to be. I remember the days of Narrator where, I mean, once you even got it open, then it was, you know, really, really difficult to even get it to read anything. And so at this point in time, is it better? Is it usable? Can you read web pages or navigate apps with it? Absolutely. Especially native Windows apps. I think Sean's mentioned this before on the program, where even the native Windows apps, it really works nicely. But overall, I don't think I'm ready for a full switch, but it's getting there.
But the reason I bring that up is because, you know, a lot of people say, well, NVDA is great, and it's almost seen as a competitor to JAWS. That's fair, isn't it? I mean, because it is quite fully featured.
Sure.
But my only issue with that is that it's not something that I would say is as supported as JAWS or as supported as Narrator. Because you think about it, Microsoft are behind Narrator. They've built it into their product. It's there. It's not going anywhere. And I genuinely believe Microsoft would never take it away. They would only enhance it. So I just wonder, from a new user point of view, or for someone who's maybe just starting to use screen readers, and I thought about it when I was starting out using screen reader, I had issues with Narrator, but then I thought to myself, the standard I was using at work was JAWS, and that's what forced me to use JAWS, and I felt that a little bit unfair on Narrator, because, you know, if companies are just buying licenses for JAWS all over the place, then no one's going to ever use Narrator on the system. And the problem is, once you've signed up to a screen reader, it's a bit like buying a phone or going with a particular brand of smartphone. Once you've got one, you've kind of bought into it. You know, you've learned all the key commands. You know how it works. Why would I go and learn it all again? But I think it's a good option out there, and I kind of hope it's not. I hope it doesn't get too good too late, if you know what I mean.
Well, I think it is a good option, and because your standard Windows shortcuts are utilized throughout all three of them, JAWS, NVDA, and Narrator, they do all make good options. This discussion actually came up recently online, and Sean and I both gave similar suggestions, saying learn JAWS, get to know your keystrokes, but learn NVDA and even learn Narrator. It's not bad to have it in your toolkit, right, Sean? That's the advice that we were giving, was it's not a bad idea to learn all three of these.
Exactly. Look, with Windows 10, there are accessibility issues still there. The control panel, the settings, the Edge browser. There's things that the main screen readers out there, JAWS and NVDA, there's things that they still struggle with, which Narrator can handle easily, as Tim said, the Windows Store apps especially. So it's just there. It's system-based, so it's built into the system. It's easy to invoke. It's easy to get rid of, and it does work well. The one thing I got to say is the reason I think Narrator can't take its place, as with all the other standalone screen readers, is that it is slow. And once you know, anyone that uses a screen reader for any length of time, it's fine for starting out. It will read most of the things on there like the other ones. There's lots of features, but it is unresponsive. If you want to quickly jump through, like with NVDA, I can quickly jump through, I can tab, and it will keep up with me. But with Narrator, I find that it's sluggish, and I'm waiting for it to read what I'm currently on. And I'm, you know, for me, that is annoying. And for most screen reader users, I think they'll find that unacceptable.
Is that anything to do with the computer you're using, Sean, or is that just the software, do you think?
No, I think it's definitely the software, because I've noticed it on most computers.
Agreed.
It's the way that the Narrator uses the accessibility API. But that may be the reason why it's so much better in certain situations than Jaws or NVDA. But either way, it does mean that it's annoying to use after a while. Mm-hmm. Now, hopefully that's something they can, you know, maybe that's something in code they can increase the performance. But at the moment, I use it as a backup for reading those areas where the others struggle, but I can't use it as my system-based one because it's just too slow.
I think when you start out using a screen reader very quickly, I noticed this anyway, when I began using it, and we're talking now about a year ago, I went from needing it to be slow and reading about, you know, 45% speaking rate, which is very slow. Very quickly, and we're talking within weeks, getting to the, this is really annoying me, I need to speed this up, and then going up to about 60%, and then a couple of weeks later I was up to about 75, and that's where I've now sat. And, you know, that speaking rate has been sort of consistent now for me, but I've noticed that, and I have to say, although, and I agree, I don't know about Narrator so much, I've only dabbled with Narrator, but certainly with Jaws, it is fast, it is responsive, it keeps up. NVDA, again, you're more you guys are more experts than I am on that. I have dabbled again, but not enough. But VoiceOver on the Mac, which is now where I'm kind of landed, it's very unresponsive at times. And, you know, it's actually, I would argue, in the most recent update with High Sierra from macOS, I would say that it's not been a great experience. I'm finding it slow. I'm finding it having issues. And keeping up is a challenge. But what I would say is just a little hint for those out there who are using macOS and using VoiceOver and maybe feeling the same pain as I do, change different voices, because I've found the voice can sometimes make the difference. Some voices, one voice, what was it I changed to? I can't remember if it was Serena or Kate. It was one of the two, and it just became very unresponsive. And yet when I changed it back to Alex, it was fine. Bizarre.
That is true, and that is the same on iOS on the iPhone. There's some voices where it will either read things in a funny way, but that's not so much an issue. But sometimes there is performance issues there as well, and if you change the voice, it can make a real difference.
And these voices are quite, I mean, if you look at the amount of megabytes, 140 odd megabytes for a voice, there's a lot in there, obviously. So, you know, that obviously takes part of the processing, getting all that in place. I mean, it's very clever how it does it, but it's, you know, it just might be a little useful tip to know. And that might be the case across other devices as well. And speaking rate does matter. If you're using it fast, I mean, I tend to, don't be you guys, I tend to use characters and words when I'm typing. Some people hate that. Do you? Yeah, that's good.
Yeah.
Because I like that. I like to know what I'm typing. Okay, so
it does help.
Well, you know, I know a lot of people don't like it. A lot of people say, oh, I hate that because it's just a constant in your ear. And I get that. But yeah, it's personal choice. And that's the great thing about it. You can turn it on or off if you don't want it. Just a quick side note on this. I am a huge fan of cheap, as you know. And one of the types of tablets and I've been looking at for the past couple of years has been Linx tablets, L-I-N-X. And they brought out recently a 12-inch version, which kind of mirrors the style of the Microsoft Surface Pro. Very similar in style. It's got the screen which is detached from the keyboard being a fabric type material which detaches away. The tablet has a kickstand at the back that you can pull out, and you can have the tablet sit at whatever angle you want, and then this keyboard snaps on magnetically on the front and you can use it. I will say it's a budget version of it, and I think even they would admit that. You know, we're talking about £200 for this, which compared to a Microsoft Surface Pro, which is what, about quadruple that?
Yeah.
Octuple that, if that's even a word.
It is now.
Yeah, it is now. You know, so it's an interesting little device. And these tablets have been coming out. They started out with the 8-inch one, then they brought out a 10-inch tablet, and then they brought out a 10-inch tablet with a keyboard, and suddenly it became a laptop, and on it went. Now they've actually brought out a fully-fledged laptop. It's the Lynx Laptop 14-inch. I saw it in a supermarket the other day. I think they tend to team up with supermarkets rather than superstores like PC World and such like. It's more your kind of Tesco's and Asda's they'll join up with, which is good. You know, you can get a decent laptop whilst you buy your bread and milk. But this is good. This is an interesting little laptop. It's got a Pentium processor in it. Now, Sean's going to laugh at this point. But but look, it is what it is. You know, it's a £249 laptop. What are you looking for in it? If you want a Core i7, you're not going to get it for £250. But it's got 4GB RAM, it's got a 64GB hard drive, it doesn't have a lot of space on it. That can be a negative over time. But it depends on the services that you use. And that leads me on to my next point. I mean, this laptop, I will say, I mean, had a really nice keyboard to it, really nice keyboard. Very MacBook Air-like, by the way. Very similar in terms of design. Very thin. I would almost say I almost thought it was a MacBook Air at first. The screen on it, I mean, I have to tell you, I'm not great at this side of it, but it looked okay. But I'm not looking for something with a great screen. I'm looking for something with great processor or decent processor. And I'm thinking with NVDA or even Narrator on this, this could be a useful little machine for someone starting out. So I just want to put that on your radar. It's an option out there. Try it first. Go into one of the stores and try it. You might think it's utter garbage. I don't know. I'm not selling it. It's not my product to sell.
I've just got to say, for that price, I actually don't think it's that cheap.
You don't?
No, not with that processor. That processor is definitely end of life. And for $249, I mean, look, obviously I'm going to say add a little bit extra money and you can jump on an i3, an i5 maybe, for £300-something. It just worries me going for that sort of age of hardware, the Pentium processor. I don't know. We're not even sure how long that's going to be supported by Windows. In the next few updates, they're talking about removing support for the older chips because it's just too old. So, yeah, I don't know. I would like it. If it was $149, then it's a no-brainer. But $249, it's a bit too close for a modern budget laptop for me.
Okay, just my side note, though, regarding all of this, having a laptop, irrespective of what it is, having a laptop with a smaller hard drive and the virtue of that is that there are services now, and Dropbox, which I use all the time, we use it for our show so we can send audio to each other, and it's a brilliant, brilliant system. For those who don't know, it's a cloud-based storage system that lets you store, I think, depends on the plan you're on, but it's up to, a terabyte in the cloud, which means that you don't have to have that stuff on your computer. You can have it in the cloud. Now, the problem was for a long time, and I still have this today because I haven't upgraded yet, on this basic plan, what you do is you still have to have the content of what you want to put up in the cloud on your device. So you might have a computer at home with a hard drive attached to it, and that hard drive might have everything in it that you want to upload to the cloud, but you have to leave it there. And that's a bit of a problem because it means that if you use a laptop solution, as I do all the time, I had to constantly keep connecting my external drive so that it would connect to Dropbox and say, look, all my stuff's still here, don't delete everything.
Yes.
And all that nonsense. Whereas now what they've done is they've brought out this new tier called Dropbox Professional, which allows users like you and I to upgrade to it. And what it does is it lets you see all your files on your computer through File Explorer or through your Finder on your Mac or whatever, and it will let you view those files, but it won't actually download them until you need them. And that sounds quite interesting to me. However, I will say this, go check it out. The price point doesn't do anything for me, but if it suits you, great. It sounds like a great feature. I like this idea, and I think this is where these cloud services should be heading. What do you guys think?
Yeah, when cloud services like this first started becoming popular, honestly, I was a bit skittish about using them. Just the idea of moving things on or off my hard drive or even having to keep that backup on my hard drive at all times, but then having this thing in the cloud and just kind of nervous about the whole thing. But obviously over time, it's just the way to do things now. And it is a clean process. It's a nice process. And with updates like this, I think it really, really helps move it more even into the mainstream, other than just, you know, tech geeks using it or people using it for office, you know, type situations, or even like us using it for audio. I think that this is going to become more and more of a standard, quite honestly, especially these type of laptops we're talking about, going back to the Lynx. So I think that things like Dropbox and OneDrive and all that, it's a good way to go. It's a good way to make sure that you've got your files backed up, and especially when it comes to sharing files with other people.
I mean, there are some people out there who just don't like the idea of backing up in this way, because they think their data is at risk. And that's an interesting point, I guess. There's so much data hacking going on. It's unnerving, but equally, you know, I'd rather, you have to sort of balance the backup and how important your data is versus, you know, the privacy side of it. Now, so far, touch wood, Dropbox has been fine and there's been no issues. I think all the cloud services like OneDrive have been the same. Yeah. There was a whole host of other ones. I remember one years ago, which kind of disappeared, called Hubic. Hubic was great because you could get like a billion tons of storage for like £1 a month or something. It was ridiculous. It didn't last long as a company. I can't think why.
I wonder why.
Yeah. but basically I love the idea of this, because really only the end of the world will bring about the end of your data. And by that point, do you really care? You know, if you lose your pictures of your dog,
yes,
whilst the world is burning, then it doesn't really matter so much. You know, perspective is important at that point. Right, just one quick method, one quick story on Twitterific. Now, I have been looking for a new way of getting Twitter on my Mac and also on my phone for a while. Twitterific version 5 is out, and I love the fact that they've spent so much time and effort putting into getting this software to be accessible with VoiceOver. Because, believe it or not, you would think that seems fair enough these days. Well, you know, that's good, they've done it. But actually, not a lot of these apps are, especially apps you download for your Mac. They're not as accessible as you might think. This one is. Tweetbot was the one I used to use before, when I was just using the screen. And when I turned on VoiceOver, it just said button all the time. And I just gave up on it, quite frankly. I have emailed them and I've told them about it and said, look, I'm not overly happy about this. And they've come back and said, thank you so much for your comment. We'll be back in touch soon. So I don't know what that means, but you know, hopefully they'll fix it. But at the moment, this is the one. If you're looking for an accessible option, you actually want to use Twitter, this is a good option. What's nice as well is you get full accessibility, so you can navigate the timeline, you can compose tweets, you can even attach image descriptions quickly and easily using VoiceOver. I like that. And you can read anywhere. Now, this is important. Whether you use Twitterific on the phone or the iPad or another Mac, the app will automatically sync your reading position for a seamless Twitter experience. Now, what that means is that if you are like me, you go through your Twitter feed and then, you know, you probably lose the place after a while. Or you can back to it later and there's a 10 billion Donald Trump tweet you haven't read yet, then, you know, you want to start from there, I guess. So, you know, that gives you the opportunity to do that. And then, of course, you can move around as you wish. It's a really good app. And, I mean, are you guys using apps like this? I mean, I guess I use it for the show. I guess I use it for my job. I think I'd probably get into Twitter more using apps like this.
You know, for the longest time, I used just the native Twitter app. And then a long while back when Twitterific first came out, for iOS, I used it for quite a while and I really liked it. I enjoyed it. But for whatever reason, I don't know if it was maybe too many features or just, I don't know what the reason was, but for whatever reason, I went back to the native Twitter app. But Twitterific is really good. It is very accessible. And with this news, like you said, about it coming back to the Mac and being very accessible on the Mac, just as accessible as it is on iOS, I think is really good news, because there are people who don't enjoy or don't like the experience of the native Twitter app. And so to have options that aren't a mainstream quote unquote company, it's this other company making this and making it accessible, and they've made a point to make it accessible. This was a Kickstarter to bring it back to the Mac, and they said, we promise there will be accessibility when we do this, and they've kept to that promise. So I think it's a really good thing.
Yeah, I don't use the Mac very often at all now, but it's good that this option is out there for Twitter, and that there is a lot of talk and a lot of conversation about this because it is so accessible. So it looks like it's the definite option if you do want to use Twitter on the Mac. But I just want to throw a quick one in at the end here, and that is to do with Windows Update. Now, as we know, Windows 10 has been a free update for users of assistive tech. But Microsoft recently announced that they are ending that free update.
Boo!
Exactly. December 31st. So if you haven't got Windows 10 yet, I would say jump on the free update while you can. Now, it's funny to me, the reason that they made it still a free upgrade for users of Windows 7 and Windows 8 and users of assistive tech was because they acknowledged that there are some accessibility issues in there. So the fact that they're making they're getting rid of the free update seems to say that, oh, we fixed all the accessibility issues.
That's the implication.
As we know, yes, that is not true. There are still issues there. Obviously, there are workarounds using Narrator, as we talked about earlier. So it's not a deal breaker there. But look, Windows 10, it is the way to go, really. And I know people are slightly scared, maybe that's the wrong word, but of updating to, especially if you're using something like 7. But it's a free update. It is. Why not get it now while it's free, while you can? December 31st.
And there are people out there who are still using XP.
Yes. Yes, I know. And yeah, get a cheap Windows 7 and then upgrade to Windows 10, I would say.
Yeah, I mean, I think they should have extended it to Windows XP for the upgrade program, but you know, so be it. But I think there's a lot of people out there who are really just worried about the upgrade. Although, what I would say to you if you are worried about upgrading is actually maybe be more worried about what you currently have, because what you currently have might be more prone to hacking or not be supported in a way that means it would become less secure. I'd say you probably want to get upgrading now. Certainly from XP and from 7, yeah. I mean, you know, if nothing else, you're getting a free upgrade, you know, so take the opportunity while you can. But I think the problem that some people may encounter is if you've got JAWS, unless you're using the latest version, you're going to have to upgrade to the latest version, because JAWS 18 is the one that's kind of working with all the issues that the Microsoft Edge browser had and all of that. They seem to have managed to get around all of that. So, you know.
Well, I don't know about that. Well, I would say there, that the Edge browser is just a bad browser to use if you use a screen reader anyway.
Okay, well, just a quick note on my second week with Android. I have to tell you guys, I've already taken the SIM out of the phone.
No.
Oh, dear.
Oh, that's not the attitude. Second week in. I'm so disappointed.
Okay, well, let me explain why. So I had to read an email. I had to actually do something on the phone. And that was when the problem started, really. No. So I had to go into Microsoft Outlook, which is what I use, and we're on an Exchange system at RNIB, so that's what I use. And I went into the app, tried to read a message. I was trying to get a phone number in the message. Now, I have to be honest, irrespective of any phone I use, I always find this a little bit tricky. But what I find is with, at least now I've learned the web rotor, or the rotor as it is on the iPhone, where you just sort of take two fingers on the screen and turn it a bit like you would be unscrewing a nail or whatever.
I think you unscrew a screw.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, how do you unscrew a nail? But yeah, so you do that, and then that sort of gives you options. And some of those options might be to find specific items in text, you know, and it can be links or whatever. And, you know, phone numbers generally come up as links. Well, I was looking for something very similar by using the swipe down, one finger swipe down method in Android, and it was getting me to things like characters and words and lines. So I was able to navigate by line, so then I changed to characters, but then I was having to think about the sentence I was reading by character. That's always a challenge, as you're sort of making up a sentence in your head by letters. I get to the phone number, and then because I don't know what I did, I think I just moved away from the screen for a second. And then I touched the screen and it lost its place and started reading the email from the top again. And I had to then go through this process. And I was in a bit of a hurry. And I won't blame Android completely for this. I'll blame my Olympus dictaphone, because it died in the process of me trying to get this phone number. And that's why I had to go into the phone to get it in such a hurry. And it was a nightmare to try and get to this number and then get it to read the number. So at that point, I just got very frustrated, and I sort of took the SIM out and swapped it back into my iPhone so I could quickly do my job. Now, I'm not saying I'm going to never go back to it, because I am. I bought this thing, so I'm going to use it. But it just sort of highlighted to me some of the usage problems. And actually then it sort of showed me some of the issues around the simplicity of Android at this stage. Now, I can hear the Android fans now screaming and getting their pitchforks sharpened for me on this one. But I've got to say, I will be going back to it over the course of this week. I have already gone back to it, actually. I've already put the SIM card back in, and I am back into it again. I started the first week saying it's not the worst system in the world. It isn't the worst system in the world. It's about getting used to it. And I think we have to be fair that, you know, it takes time to get used to a new system. And it is different, you know, in a lot of ways. And I think it's less responsive in some ways. I don't think it keeps up with you as much. I think it's more awkward to navigate around and find what you're looking for specifically. But overall, and sort of trying to paint a decent picture of this, I think that the general experience of using it has been interestingly good because, you know, for example, when you go into something new, like a new menu, it will automatically jump to the top of that menu and it will read through properly. It kind of contextually makes sense to a blind person more than I think iPhone does. Although, I have to say the flip side to that is that I think the new iOS 11 update has actually brought some of those features along with it. And I find it more contextually aware. And what I mean by that is that you kind of understand from the beginning point, when you go to a new page or you open up an app, it immediately plants you at the right place, which is the top left of the screen. And that's what all these screen readers really should do, is sort of take you to a key anchor point, as you might call it, where you know that's where I've begun, rather than dropping you in the middle of a page somewhere and you don't know where you are. The system now seems, on both Android and iOS, to take you straight to the top left of the screen and work all the way down to the top right. Bottom right. And that makes more sense to me. So I'm glad Android does that. I'm really glad iOS is doing it. So we shall see what week three brings.
Let me stand up for Android here. It could be just the Outlook app. I mean, there's, again, one of the pluses of Android is, let's try another one. Let's try an email app that supports the Exchange servers and see if that's any better. You know, it could just be down to the Outlook app there that it's not supporting, embedded links and things like that.
Yeah, you know, Sean might be right. It might be just something specifically with the app, although I have a feeling it's not, because if it's a navigation of a text field or something like that you're having issues with, that may still be just something functional with the screen reader, but it is something to look into. It might be something worthwhile to check and see if you can get another app that works with Exchange other than Outlook and see if that does still cause an issue with navigating the text. And if you still have the issue, then obviously it's going to be talkback. But if not, then obviously we need to get in touch with Microsoft. But I know what Sean's trying to say in defending Google here with the app, or Android with it might possibly being the app, but because of the navigation issue that you're having, I'm actually leaning more towards it being something with TalkBack than the app, quite honestly.
Mm. I think it's a good system, don't get me wrong. I mean, it's built well and it works. It's just, I think often the sensitivity of the screen on these devices is just quite different. And I find, you know, it's very easy to touch the screen, you know, or to move something without meaning to. Whereas I find with the iPhone, it seems a little less sensitive, and when you swipe, it will do it, you know. I don't know what it is. Yeah. It's something about the type of, and it's something, again, you just have to get used to. But it's, it can be very annoying, and it does make you want to throw the thing through the nearest window.
Well, as you said, maybe some of our listeners out there, they are screaming now saying, I know how to fix that. So if you do, then email. We definitely want to hear.
techtalk@rnib.org.uk. Tell me exactly what you think of what I'm saying. But, you know, try and be nice about it. Because I do have to read them on air. Yeah, I do have to read these out on air. So, you know, let's be nice about it. Right, let's move away from all of this computer stuff. Let's talk about battery chargers for iDevices. Julie Rodaway is here with her accessible suggestion.
You may recall that in a previous edition of the show, I discuss an accessible battery power bank. I have another one of these in my hand, sold by the Harbolt company HARBOLT company, who, although they are US-based, will ship internationally. This particular charger has, I understand, been produced with a blind and visually impaired in mind. And there's nothing to it, really. You've got two USB ports so you can charge two things at once. Then to charge the unit, you've got a micro USB port, and when you insert a plug into a wall socket on the other end, you'll receive a series of bleeps and vibrations to alert you that the unit is charging. Similarly, when you are charging anything with the unit, you receive the same alert, so you know whatever you need to charge is charging. So, if you go past the USB ports, you have a square recess in which is housed a button with a dot on it. If you press this without anything being plugged into the unit itself, you hear this. So, you heard two bleeps there. This told me that there is only 50% juice within the unit. One bleep would have alerted me that there had been 25% juice in the unit. Three bleeps would have told me that there was 75% in the unit. And four would have told me that the unit was 100% charged. This is extremely powerful. It's got 15,000 milliamp, allowing you to charge whatever you need to charge numerous amount of times before the battery within the unit depletes. If you want to change the manner of the alerts, you can. If you don't want vibrations and bleeps, if you press and hold the button on the unit, you can change it so it just bleeps at you. Or if you press and hold the button again, you can change it back to vibration and bleeps. So enough said, I've got my iPhone here. And I'm going to plug this in and I'm going to charge my iPhone. Now, to instigate charging, you just simply press the button on the unit.
Charging device battery, 98%.
Okay, so it's charging the battery. Now, you'll hear a series of bleeps. I think you get three alerts. There's the second one and you get the final one. So this tells you that whatever it's charging, it's charging properly. This cost me £70 from the Harbolt company. A mite expensive, you might think, but I think for the accessibility, I think it's well worth it. Happy charging.
Okay, thanks for that, Julie. Always interesting to hear what Julie has picked up this week. I like this idea of the accessible battery charger. I mean, I know there's loads of them out there, and I know this one's not cheap. But at the same token, it is accessible, and a lot of these you wouldn't know unless you go by the device itself that you're charging, that you will know if it's fully charged or not. You wouldn't know if the device, the actual charger's got any power in it. That's the problem, isn't it?
That's it. Yeah, this is really good. It's got plenty of power as well, 15,000 milliamps. I mean, it's got plenty of punch to it. It's accessible. Yes, it is up there in price-wise, but you get what you pay for, and it does seem interesting and useful.
Yeah, there's such a wide variety of options when it comes to these. And yeah, it, like you said, Stephen, it can be a problem because you just don't know until you buy it if it's going to be accessible or not, if it's going to do what you want and how easy it's going to be to use. But in a case like this, again, like you guys said, it does offer quite a bit of a charge and you are going to get what you pay for. It's going to be robust and do a good job. There are obviously other options out there that may be less expensive, but they also might be less accessible. So this is definitely, something that I think is worth having, especially if you use devices quite a bit. You want to have something like this on hand.
Okay. Let's turn to some emails then, because there's so many to get through. Let's start with Kelly Muggeridge, who is a regular listener to the program, who says, "Hi gang, after listening with interest on making set-top boxes accessible, Sky used to have a gadget called Sky Talker, which sits on top of your set-top box. I had one of these, and it gave you some of the features, but not all of them. It told you what channel you were on and the program, but that was about it. The speech wasn't great, and it was rather sluggish. I paid around £60 for it way back in 2008. I went onto the Sky Accessibility website to see if it still exists, and apparently it doesn't. Although Sky Talker made things a little accessible, it wasn't accessible enough. It was too limited. I don't know how many of you have used it, but I don't think it took on. It would be interesting if any of you out there have come across these. It was small, around the size of a small cassette player. However, now Sky has a voiceover app which you can download on any gadget such as your iPhone, iPad, Android smartphones and Android tablets. I don't know what it's like, so if anyone else has used it, I'd be very interested to hear your thoughts. Oh, and on a positive note, I have some news. Kelly says, just to let you know that Life After Blindness podcast is now available on RNIB's In Your Pocket device. Take care and look forward to the next show. All the best, Kelly from West Sussex. There you go, Tim. Good news for you. You're on even more devices.
Yeah, that is really good news, and I'm very happy and grateful to RNIB for doing that for me. I really appreciate that. Trying to get that word out to anybody, as many people as we can. And people can listen to the last episode where, Stephen, you actually were my guest, and we dove into talking about losing vision. So I encourage everybody to take a listen to that and my conversation with Stephen. But yeah, thank you for that.
I was amazing.
You were definitely amazing.
I got to say, it was good. I was quite surprised, Stephen. Did you have a stand-in for that?
Yes, that's right. Yeah, somebody else did it for me, and I have to say they were brilliant at it. So much so they're going to replace me on a fairly permanent basis. Yeah, that it was really good fun actually to do that, because you know sometimes it's just nice to. I mean, we love talking tech, and I love talking about tech, but sometimes you just have to kind of get out your system about how you're feeling about your site, and you know, it was good to have that conversation. So yeah, if you do want to listen, that's where you'll find it, and you can comment favorably or otherwise. I'd be interested to hear what people think. But yeah, on to Kelly's other point though about accessible boxes. Yeah, I remember the Sky Talker. It was okay. I know what she means about sluggish. I mean, you would turn to a TV channel, and I think about half an hour into the program, it would tell you what you were watching. Slight exaggeration, but yeah, it wasn't the most quickest of devices I had ever tried, and it only read, I think, what was on the channel and what was on Now. I don't think you could go into the message through the menu, I should say, and get to the EPG, the channel list and the program list, and actually see what was on. That was the problem. You can only really do Now and Next. But it was a start. It was something. Then they did bring out this voiceover app. What I'll say, though, is Sky Q, which is the new version of Sky, which is this multi-room home system. It doesn't have to be multi-room, but, you know, ultimately it is. A system where you can have more than one box in the room, different rooms around the house, and they are all effectively controlled by one box. Very complicated and boring, but basically it works really well. I've got it, and it's good, but the downside to it is it's completely inaccessible. So, you know, if I want to see what's on the planner, if I like, if on what's on my planner, I can go into the app and I can see what's on there, but I can't actually play it from there. Because there's no function to just play on the television, because the app is, in theory, could control 4 or 5 different boxes around the house, so you don't have that function. So all you can do is watch it on the phone, which isn't great. And of course, the other issue is that you can't then switch channels with it, so you can't use it as a remote, even though the app is accessible. Quite annoying, quite frankly, but I understand why it doesn't do it. But I just wish they could come up with something that did, because at the moment there's no way to accessibly use the Sky Q system, which is a shame. I mean, it's almost a backward step, because the previous system, Sky Plus, it did have an app which was fully accessible and you could control the box with it. So that was good. Yeah. And the Sky Talker worked with it. But the Sky Talker, if you do have one, don't try and plug it into your Sky Q box, because it won't work. It doesn't work at all with it. So don't use it.
I've got to say, you were saying it's a shame. I'm going to get into a rant here. It's appalling. They put the time and effort to make a Sky Talker a separate piece of hardware. You know, again, very niche market, but they took the time to do that. Yet they switched to a purely digital system and totally miss out accessibility. That is terrible. Terrible. The Sky Q should be totally accessible. Like you said, the Sky Plus app, you could schedule recordings and change channel, control your box, all an accessible app, perfect interface for it. Sky Q, nowhere to be seen. Terrible. Should be ashamed of themselves.
I want this. Right, you've got me on it now as well. Do you know, not only that, I want the guy who runs Sky, whoever he is, and I don't mean Murdoch, I mean somebody, I guess, a bit lower down the chain, who runs the whole thing, to sit down and say, right, actually, hang on a minute. Why have we spent all this money and time on building this great system? And it is a great system that they've built. But what they've done is they've built all this audio description into it. So they've got all these shows they make are audio described and very good audio description as well. And yet none of it's available on demand. So if I start watching a series, let's say Tin Star, I think is the big one that they're promoting at the moment. No, I haven't seen that. If I wanted to watch that from the beginning, everybody else can go back and watch it on box sets. But I can't because it doesn't have AD.
Yeah.
On the box set, on demand.
Well, this is where the new legislation comes in place of all on-demand streaming services, you know, should have audio description. So, again, it's something they've got to do through the legal channels, regulation, rather than... It just makes sense, surely. This is a digital platform. I'm not saying it's easy to do, but it's a digital platform. It is an option that they can put in place. And yet, it's just not there. I just get so annoyed by this.
Yeah. No, I agree. I think it's very frustrating. Tim, what's it like for you in the States? I mean, you know, it's a bit better, isn't it? Because Comcast are the ones I've heard about that have put some effort into making their set-top boxes accessible.
Comcast was one of the first ones to do it without being forced to with legislation. And as of December 31st of last year, all set-top boxes now going forward, all newly manufactured boxes by law have to have some sort of voice feedback in the box. So going forward with any new box, we're going to get it. Now it has expanded to other companies. I know most of the higher end boxes that you can get with companies, for instance, Dish Network, they've got their Hopper, I believe is the highest end version of their boxes. And that has voice feedback within the box. But if you have one of the older or lower model boxes, it doesn't. So right now it's kind of a pick and choose, but going forward, the new ones will have it. And that's a good thing, obviously, going forward for us. It's just a matter of having those new boxes come out. Audio description within apps is getting a little bit better here and there, but that's still up to the service themselves or the company themselves. So, you know, your standard NBC and ABC, you know, the big channels over here, they do offer audio description within their apps for some shows, but not all. There are requirements for a certain amount of hours of audio description on actual live over the air TV. So it's not great. Well, let me rephrase that. It is great, but it could be better. There's still a lot of work that could be done here, just like there is over there.
Yeah, you seem to have it the other way around. You know, we don't have the accessible box, but we get great amounts of audio description. You don't get much audio description, but you do get great boxes. So can't someone just put this together?
I mean, that is a good point that for the longest time in the UK, yes, audio description has definitely been ahead of the US when it comes to audio description. For the longest time, you know, I've had to go to friends to get audio described content from the UK if I wanted to have it audio described. But what I'm saying is that now the US is still nowhere near catching up to the UK when it comes to that. You know, BBC has really led the way, I think, in many ways with audio description over the last many years.
Yeah, amazing. Absolutely amazing work.
Yeah, absolutely. And so that I think has been a model to follow. But in the United States, because of legislation the last year or two or couple of years, the TV networks have had to catch up. They've been forced to catch up with over the air content. And the more that they add, that is definitely being helpful there. And because of the fact that they're incorporating into their apps, to Sean's point, it shouldn't be difficult to say, well, we've already got this digital media, we've already got this app, why can't we just add an audio track that's got the description in it, kind of like a Netflix has done and Amazon have done. The TV networks shouldn't be able to have any difficulty with this, but it is, you know, some cases it's not there yet. So yeah, I'm not saying in any way that the US is where the UK is, absolutely not, but we're a lot better than we have been.
Yeah, no, it sounds like it. And it sounds like you're heading in the right direction. I feel that audio description, I've so much of it around, but my issue is accessing it on demand. That is my big gripe at the moment. And, you know,
yes,
aside from Netflix, aside from BBC, I just wish the others would get to it. And I wish they would realize why that's so important. I think that's the key for me. It's not the fact that they're not doing it. It's they don't seem to understand why. And if they could just get the fact that, you know, we all want to watch the same shows, we all want to watch the same content, but we're not able to. And you know what? It will mean at some point, if I don't get this, if this isn't fixed, and I don't just mean for me personally, but yeah, okay, for the moment it is for me. If this isn't fixed, I'm going to cancel my subscription to these things because I'm not paying money for something I can't use or get the full benefit out of. What is the point? And, you know, it's not going to be me that fixes that problem. It's going to be all of us that say, well, do you know what? Screw it. I'm going to go to, you know, only watch stuff on iPlayer, which is ridiculous. We shouldn't be in that. We shouldn't be in that situation.
My family just use Netflix. That's it. We don't watch any terrestrial TV at all.
Is that what you say when the man comes round?
Exactly. What TV?
Right, listen, just a quick message from Maria from Australia. Hello, Maria. I just wanted to say I really enjoyed Potter's Picks this week. I think the feature is great and very useful. I do have some feedback, though. Listening to the review about the compact grill oven, I realised that the buttons weren't mentioned. Are the buttons touchscreen or are they knobs? Are they just a smooth dial or do they click? And will they need to be marked for someone who's totally blind? I would love to know. Well, Maria, I'll put that question back to Claire. Claire Potter, of course, is our Potter's Picks lady, and she is going to be with us in just a moment, actually, running through this week's picks. But we'll get that answer on very soon for you, I promise. That is almost it for our show this week. We are going to now turn to Potter's Picks. If you do want to get in touch with us, please do. techtalk@rnib.org.uk. We really do talk a lot, guys. So it's time to let someone else have a word in. So let's hear from Claire. Potter's Picks now. In the kitchen, once again, with her three items under £100.
It's Claire here again, and I'm back with Potter's Picks, where this week we are continuing to look at different items to help you in the kitchen, high-tech and low-tech. Last week I spoke about items which you can get from Coopers of Stortford. So my first item for today is the soup maker, which has the code of E897 and it is £44.99. It has two buttons for two different settings of soup, so it's chunky or smooth. And to use it, you simply add the ingredients, then choose your preferred setting, so you choose either smooth or chunky. And it works by cooking the ingredients and then blending them together. But it can also be used to make smoothies, porridge, hot chocolate or purees and dressings. It has a 1.7 litre jug, which I really like, because in 25 minutes you actually get quite a lot of soup or whatever you're making. So it does actually save quite a lot of time and quite a lot of money. So that is one option for you. My next item is the mini kitchen with the code F010 and it is £69.99. This item can do all the things that a standard oven can do, but it is a really compact size because it can actually fit onto a work surface. And it can be used to bake cakes, roast joints, boil, grill, fry. And it also has a rotisserie. And it comes with a baking tray, a rack, a crumb tray, a rotisserie and a special rotisserie handle. It is very easy to clean. And it comes in a choice of black or white. So if you have a different colour surface, you can choose whichever colour you would find easier to see. It also has two hobs, which are electric and which are quite easy to use. They are quite safe and they are electric, which does reduce your risk of a fire when you use gas hobs. These are a little bit more safer to use. And I think they also do heat up a lot quicker. It works on a work surface, like I said, and it is also quite a useful item for people who maybe struggle to bend down to get food out of the oven, and they would rather have something on a little bit of a higher level so they can just take the food out and transfer it just that little bit quicker and that little bit easier without needing that much assistance. So it's quite a useful item to consider if it is something that you need. My final item for today is the halogen oven plus lid and accessory pack. And it is E910, that's the product code, and the price is £39.99. It is very easy to use and it cooks up to 60% faster than a conventional oven. It uses a fraction of the electricity, which saves quite a lot of money. And how it works is that hot air circulates evenly around the food, which browns and crisps to your taste. So it's great for roasting, baking, steaming, reheating, defrosting, broiling and frying. It is a lot healthier to cook as the fat just drains away from the food. So it works a lot faster, but it also makes a healthy meal at the same time. So it's really convenient to use. It has two cooking racks, which are perfect for cooking all meals at once. It has a timer and a safety switch, and it also has a self-cleaning function, which I think is really useful for after you've finished and you maybe don't have a lot of time to clean up the oven. So it might be quite a useful function to consider using if you do decide to get this item. It is really easy to use again, very much like the second item that I spoke about. It does fit onto a work surface, so it saves quite a lot of space and it is a lot safer to use as well, and it's a lot faster. So again, if you don't have a lot of time or you don't feel safe using a conventional oven, that might be an option that you might want to consider. Okay, so I will now give you the contact details, the correct ones, for Coopers of Stortford. I will start off with the telephone number, which is 0330 331 0300. I will say that number one more time. 0330 331 0300. And the website is www.coopersofstortford.co.uk. I'll spell it one more time as well for anybody who wants to note it down. It's Coopers, which is COOPERS, of, which is OF, Stortford, which is STORTFORD.co.uk. And like I said last week, you can order online, over the phone, and they do also send out catalogues every so often in the post if it is something that you need. Like I said last week, they're not available in alternative formats, but if it's something that you need, please do take it to your local society for visually impaired people, if you do have one in your local area, which I really do hope you do, and they can transcribe those for you into an alternative format or offer the best option for you so that you can still access the product and or their website if it is something that you need. So I hope you find these items useful, and I'm back again next week where I'll be talking about items in the kitchen that can help you prepare a drink. Bye for now.
Thank you again, Claire. Brilliant to hear from you. And another three items under £100 in Potter's Picks in the kitchen once again this week. Brilliant. That is it for our show this week. Thank you so much for listening. Tim and Sean, great to have you with us as always.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Not that I could ever get rid of them. And coming up next week on the show, we are going to be hearing a demo of Samsung's voice assistant. Sounds quite interesting, doesn't it? And it was all recorded on a voice recorder built in on Windows 10. Yes, very good. That is coming up next week. Plus, we will have more Potter's Picks, more news, tech, and your feedback. All coming up on next week's Tech Talk. Thank you so much for listening. Email once again, techtalk@rnib.org.uk. Have your say on the issues around tech that matter to you. Thanks for listening.